Now, I know this is, I know it's not going to break your heart. I get that. You didn't ask for the job to begin with. And you're not going to run Monday Night Raw. I'm not going to run Monday Night Raw. No member of the McMahon family is going to run Monday Night Raw. Even though they appreciate and obviously your skills as COO and want to continue with that, the board is looking for a general manager who's independent of all of this, someone who's unbiased. They're looking for a permanent general manager whose ethics and morals are beyond reproach. But until they find that individual, they've named an interim general manager. I don't like this decision any more than you're going to like it. The interim general manager for Monday Night Raw is the executive vice president for talent relations, John Laurinaitis.
Listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Labor disputes abound in the WWE these days, and the balance of power shifts yet again. Hello everyone, you're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, and we are broadcasting to you live from the Smack Talk Studios in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. My name is James McDonald, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend and colleague, Corey Callahan.
Hey, yo.
Corey, quick thoughts heading into Vengeance.
Finally, the right man has been chosen to save the WWE.
Just kidding. Speaking about John Laurinaitis, of course. I'm actually at a point right now, James, where I'm just looking towards the future, and that from Survivor Series on to WrestleMania is a heck of a lot better than what we're witnessing now.
Well, I tell you, Corey, I swear that the entire creative team is writing this thing day by day, it seems.
Oh, of course.
Everyone, we have yet another fantastic show for you this week. We're going to catch you up on everything interesting going on in the WWE in our Tale of the Tape segment. And for tonight's top five, we are bringing to you the five best managers in WWE history.
We're going to run down all the latest news circling the business in our post-to-post report. And in our local wrestling scene, I told you, James, this segment, it's going to be the best segment on the show,
nice.
And it starts tonight. Talking to us live will be Nathan Burke, better known to the local wrestling community as Disco Fury.
Awesome.
And as always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's back body drop things off with the Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
All right, James, Smack Talk Radio Live back once again.
I'm super excited, man, to be back in the studios.
For the first time, we are broadcasting the show live.
That's right, live. It's, no redos, no nothing.
No, here we go. All right, so interesting week on Monday Night Raw this past Monday.
I'd say so. We're going to talk a little bit here in the talk about it a little bit here in the Tale of the Tape, which is our segment where we kind of want to go over the things interesting going on in the WWE.
What was your general feeling after Monday Night Raw was over this week?
Well, I'm not really too pleased with the direction that it's going, but.
And why is that?
Well, it's just it's not logical. It's not plausible. It. I don't know. It just defies all sense of reality to me.
Do you think it seems a little scrambled?
It does. It really seems scrambled, actually.
How do you think Vince McMahon is feeling about this whole situation right now? Do you think he's actually enjoying these storylines? Like, do you think this main storyline with John Laurinaitis and Triple H, do you think this is something that he is a fan of? Or do you think this is something that's probably he's just kind of going with what his writers want to do?
You know what? I can't really speak for Vince McMahon, but you know what? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's get right into it. Our Tale of Tape segment, we're going to change things up a little bit here this week. And let's talk about John Laurinaitis becoming the interim Raw General Manager.
JR, last week on Raw, you walked out on Triple H. Triple H gave you your job back. Not only did you walk out on Triple H, you walked out on the state of Oklahoma and the WWE Universe. In my book, JR, that makes you an ingrate. A hayseed, redneck, Oklahoma ingrate.
What is funny?
Oh, man.
As Executive Vice President of Talent Relations and the interim GM of Raw, JR, you're fired.
What?
That's right. You heard it there, folks. John Laurinaitis is now the new interim GM of Raw. Corey, quick thoughts?
Well, I got a lot of thoughts on this whole topic. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, firing Jim Ross,
in his hometown, nonetheless.
That, to me, is the reason why they did it. They were looking for some extreme heel heat with John Laurinaitis. What better way to have him begin his reign as the interim Raw general manager? What better way to start him out as a heel than to fire the hometown boy, Jim Ross?
Yeah, well, I mean, you had to do something with Jim Ross being in Oklahoma City, right?
Mm-hmm. James, why don't you quickly run down just exactly how this John Laurinaitis becoming the intern Raw general manager has come to fruition.
All right, for those of you who haven't been following, let's catch you up to date on how John Laurinaitis has got to where he is. So Laurinaitis was first mentioned on screen, actually, way back on the June 27th edition of Raw in CM Punk's famous work shoot promo, where he was called a glad-handing, nonsensical, douchebag yes-man.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So June 27th is when we first started seeing John Laurinaitis.
Yeah, that's when he really first started to come onto the scene. And then after that, at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, he actually tried to replicate the Montreal Screwjob, but was stopped by John Cena, who didn't want to win that way. I don't know if you remember, he kind of ran down to the ring and then got cut off and clotheslined by Cena.
Yeah.
So, and anyways, next after that, on the August 1st edition of Raw, he told then-COO Triple H to strip John Cena of his title, and then the following week, he oversaw the SummerSlam contract signing between Cena and CM Punk, which resulted in him getting kicked in the head by Punk and Triple H getting punched by Cena, which mm-hmm. was a kind of interesting way to end off that Raw. But anyways, did you want to say
something? No, I was just going to say, on the August 15th episode of Raw, he would actually then invite Kevin Nash,
that's right,
who just attacked Punk at the end of SummerSlam, costing him his title, for a private meeting in his office.
So they started to establish some sort of relationship then between Nash and Laurinaitis.
A very quick one at that.
A very quick one. But it kind of grew from there, because on the September 5th episode of Raw, Laurinaitis would join Kevin Nash in his limo after Nash was publicly fired by Triple H, and the two would be seen leaving the arena together. So,
mm-hmm.
So the relationship grows, I guess.
It kind of escalated there, or from there as well, because at the Night of Champions pay-per-view, Laurinaitis would then try to help CM Punk win his match against Triple H, but was stopped by R-Truth and The Miz, believing the whole thing to be a conspiracy. Kevin Nash would also become involved after Laurinaitis sent him a text message via ringside there.
And that's become kind of a theme with John Laurinaitis lately, is the whole text message thing. And,
Well, he's capitalizing on his cell phone. Every time you see John Laurinaitis, he has that cell phone in his hand. And the beauty of that is that they can leave the audience wondering every single time, because you never know what he's writing to whoever he's writing to.
Exactly. And it's a good little writing technique.
It's a mysterious, it's a creative writing technique that they're trying out, and it's working for John Laurinaitis.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on Laurinaitis as a whole? Like, do you enjoy him as on TV, or would you prefer to have him in the back, not being seen on television?
I'd probably prefer him not to be seen on television. I mean, the guy is just he just seems very stiff to me. If you could ever call somebody a stiff, I think mm-hmm. that'd be John Laurinaitis to a T. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, his voice really annoys me. I can't stand his voice.
Really? Because I was just about to say, the voice is one of the few things about Laurinaitis that I like. it's very unique.
It is unique, and it's very distinguishable. I just am not a fan of
hearing it. Looks
like
you're a vice president of talent relations.
Sounds like a man who's been smoking for 30 years.
It's just his natural voice.
Yeah.
But anyways, progressing with the whole Laurinaitis storyline, he would then, on the September 26th episode of Raw, advise David Otunga to use his legal knowledge to help a group of wrestlers who were disgruntled with the way that Triple H was running the show.
Laurinaitis would finally come to power at the board of after the board of directors named him the interim Raw general manager this past Monday. Vince McMahon, of all people, would deliver the news personally to Triple H, and Laurinaitis' first actions would be to fire Jim Ross and reinstate R-Truth and The Miz, who were fired by Trips 2 weeks earlier.
And that just happened on last week's Raw.
This is the problem with the on-screen firings. I mean, 2 weeks later, they're back on television.
I have, like I said on the Monday Night Review, I have never seen a wrestling firing that I've taken seriously or believed. Have you?
No, and this is just another reason why I don't. Will never believe it. You know, when you
exactly.
see it.
Exactly.
If there's going to be a legitimate firing in professional wrestling, it's bound to happen on a. It's gonna happen behind the scenes. It's not gonna happen in front of the cameras. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I definitely tell.
So I don't know why anyone ever believes that. This is my problem with the whole John Laurinaitis coming to power. First of all, the wrestlers walked out because of an unsafe work environment,
which we're gonna get to later.
Which we'll get to later. But the problem with what Laurinaitis has done as his first, well, he fired Jim Ross, which. You know, again, that's just a heelish antic to immediately put him as a heel on television.
I think they're just really trying to establish him as the foil for Triple H by going right ahead and just undoing everything that Triple H did as when he was COO.
Yeah. The second order of business that he had was bringing back The Miz and R-Truth. And this is my problem with how they've written this whole thing. You have the entire roster walk out on the WWE because of unsafe work conditions. Well, who was it that was making the WWE unsafe? The Miz and R-Truth. They straight up interfered in the main event at Hell in a Cell and caused absolute chaos, knocked out referees. You know, they were the ones that caused all the chaos among the WWE. They get rid of Triple H and they bring John Laurinaitis into power. And what's his first order of business? To
bring back the guys that everybody was complaining about.
Yeah. So that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, it's like what I was saying at the top of the show. It's just not logical. It's not making sense.
And here's the other issue I have with this. A similar example. You have all these wrestlers on the previous week's Monday Night Raw come out and stand at ringside and give a vote of no confidence because of unsafe working conditions. Well, who's one of the guys that are standing at the ring giving a vote of no confidence? It's Mark Henry.
Yeah.
And then you have Jerry Lawler, who Mark Henry just put through a table.
And he's standing right on the other side of the ring.
And he's standing right on the other side of the ring. And they're now together saying that it's unsafe working conditions?
Like, again, it's no sense whatsoever.
And that it's not that John Laurinaitis has become the intern Raw general manager that I have an issue with. It's how nothing is making sense.
Yeah.
And they are just insulting everyone's intelligence by... like you're almost supposed to forget about these things.
I think the WWE expects the average wrestling fan to just put logic on like the back seat of their brain
and just
watching the show and just accept whatever they see
and
on
just
TV.
Keep your eyes open, watch the show, and enjoy whatever it is we have to offer. And that's terrible.
It's very terrible.
And that will backfire on them over time. And when we get to the post-to-post report a little later on, I will bring up a statistic that does prove that. You know, people were legitimately interested in how this follow-up Monday Night Raw to last week's walkout was going to be. Like, people wanted to know, how were they going to start Monday Night Raw this week? Where do you go from here once an entire roster walks out? And they follow that up with this, with making John Laurinaitis the interim Raw general manager. That's not winning anybody over. That's not making anyone want to tune in to next Monday's Raw. I mean, I don't really care if John Laurinaitis is in power.
It's again, third time I've said it, no sense. It's just completely illogical. And I mean, But I kind of like the way that they've been working the storyline with John Laurinaitis kind of pulling the strings behind the scenes and kind of sabotaging Triple H's efforts as COO. I do kind of like that.
And do you think that Triple H is going to get back at him somehow?
Oh, of course. I think it's going to lead up to something at Survivor Series, definitely.
Now, do you see a potential match in John Laurinaitis? Because he did used to wrestle. So do you see a potential match in him or no?
You know what? The world of professional wrestling, I'll never say never, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's true. You're right. He did used to wrestle under Ace. What was his name?
Johnny Ace.
Johnny Ace, that's right.
One of the things that is being rumored at this point is a Survivor Series match with Triple H having a team and John Laurinaitis having a team.
That's right. I've heard about that, yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, it's the logical progression for where they're going, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no logical progression, though. Let's be honest.
Exactly.
Every week is just different. I mean, it's there's no...
We're throwing logic out the window here,
there's
folks.
No structure of any kind.
Well, and, at least that's what it seems like from a writing standpoint.
And this is the main event storyline these days. I mean, we are left scratching our heads, and no one is impressed.
Yeah.
Everyone is disappointed. Yet, this is what they want to go with. Like, I don't understand it. They're trying to create this reality era, and, you know, they're trying to bring the fans into the backstage thing, scene of things, and but they're insulting what we perceive to be the backstage so badly that this is not how it is backstage. I know that, and you know, even a 5-year-old would know that.
I totally agree with you there, and you know what? I think really what they were trying to do is they were just trying to recreate some of the magic that they had in the summertime with CM Punk, but it's fallen flat on its face, and it honestly looks like something that Vince Russo's written.
And that's the other aspect of this that I wanted to ask you about was, where does CM Punk fit into all this? Or does he even fit into any of this?
It's terrible, CM Punk's digression over the last 2 months here. He's gone from being the hottest thing in the business to just another one of the baby faces now.
Yeah.
He's just one of the good guys now.
I mean, at one point, this was about CM Punk originally with John Cena, and CM Punk wanting to make, you know, wanting to have change in the WWE. And we've gone from that to him battling with the COO of the company, Triple H, to now, this past Monday on Raw, they're shaking hands in the middle of the ring.
And they're going to have a match together.
Battling John Laurinaitis. Like, I can't even.
Don't forget they're going to have a match together at Vengeance.
Has that been made official?
I think they were toying with it at
they're
the
toying.
End of...
It's rumored. It's not official.
But you know when they toy with stuff like that, it's pretty much official.
Well, you're going to see Triple H in some capacity at Vengeance, obviously, and how CM Punk plays into that.
Well, they said it was going to be Triple H and CM Punk, I think, versus The Miz and R-Truth at Vengeance.
Have they said that?
That's what they were hinting at the end of Raw.
They were hinting at it. Again, it hasn't been made official. You're right.
But like I said, usually when they hint at stuff like that, it's...
Case in point, though, CM Punk has completely dropped off the map, and he has really no business with being involved with John Laurinaitis anymore because they've completely dropped out of, you know, there's no similarities with those two anymore. I mean, other than this mysterious person who doesn't want Triple H to be COO and doesn't want CM Punk to be champion, we're never going to find out the answer to those questions because realistically, they don't even know. This has to do with John Laurinaitis and Vince McMahon and Triple H, and there's a 3-way battle for power in that there. And who comes out on top? I bet you in the end it'll be absolutely none of those three.
Well, we can know for sure it's not CM Punk.
No, I mean, that's for sure.
When was the last time we saw him with a mic cutting a promo?
Yeah.
It's been weeks.
Well, the most mic work that he did on Monday Night Raw there was at the beginning when he told Triple H that he was with him.
Oh, he was going to do the color commentary.
And then he did the color commentary, and that was... I don't know if they silenced him on that one, but...
I was expecting something, you know, pretty good, but... It was kind of flat.
Well, why don't we move on from John Laurinaitis, because the guy drives me up the wall. So why don't we actually talk about the wrestlers walking out...
That's a pretty big story.
2 weeks ago on Monday Night Raw. Let's take a listen.
I think there's somebody behind the scenes, pulling the strings, trying to sabotage your job as COO. Only problem with that is everybody around this ring, including myself, are paying the price for it. I don't know if you hear what they're saying, but I'm saying no confidence too. And I've always heard that actions speak louder than words. I don't know what anybody else is doing, but right now, I'm reluctantly walking out.
So, as I mentioned earlier, we have Jerry Lawler, who was just thrown through a table 2 weeks prior to that, or 3 weeks prior to that. I think it was 2 weeks. Here he is standing 15 feet away from the guy who did that, the World Heavyweight Champion Mark Henry, and together they're standing in unison, walking out on Triple H, because apparently Triple H is the reason for all this.
So Triple H
chaos.
Is responsible for Mark Henry slamming him through a table?
That
See, again, it doesn't make any sense. It's completely illogical.
And the other thing is like, Jerry Lawler is a commentator, and Jim Ross is a commentator, and I found after that segment that those guys got more reaction than the actual wrestlers walking out. And that shouldn't be. When those wrestlers walk out, that should hit the audience hard. Not Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross. Would you agree?
No, I totally agree with you. And even Jerry Lawler himself was bringing up the point that we were just talking about. There's somebody behind the scenes pulling the strings, sabotaging Triple H's efforts, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's just be honest here. Like, who would it be? Like, I mean, obviously no one knows. I don't even think they know. But let's just rack our brains for a second. Who would it be that possibly does not want Triple H as the COO?
Well, the first name that honestly comes to my mind is Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm. But he just came out and told Triple H that he was doing a good job.
It could be lying. Come on, it's Mr. McMahon, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if it's not Vince, then who is it?
Exactly.
Like, is it Stephanie? I mean, it possibly could be Stephanie.
It's possibly, but that would be kind of weird seeing as how she's Triple H's wife.
I mean, when she made her on-camera presence there back near, I guess it was SummerSlam.
To build up heat with CM Punk.
Yeah, that was just to build up that whole angle, right?
Right.
With Triple H and CM Punk, and CM Punk was trashing Triple H's wife. And that's the other thing that makes me laugh. Here you have a guy who was trashing Triple H's wife, God. And then they're shaking hands in the middle of the ring the last Monday on Raw. I mean, come on. Like, what?
I think it's just because they didn't know what to do with CM Punk after they got to a certain point. And they're like, okay, let's just make him one of the top baby faces.
I told you, man, they should have let him disappear for a while with that title. And then they could have had all the chaos they wanted in the WWE.
Right.
You know, this all would make so much more sense if CM Punk had left with the title and not come back.
You know what I mean? Because I totally agree with you.
Because when you have your champion walk out with the belt and he leaves the company, the possibilities of where you can go with that is endless.
You could do a billion different things.
You could have the WWE completely crumble. Chaos everywhere. We have no champion. We have no belt. We had a guy leave the company. Where do we go from here? Who's in power? Vince McMahon, I can't believe you actually let the champion walk out with the belt. You know what I mean? Like, that is legitimate chaos that could have happened in the WWE.
Oh, it would have been beautiful. They would have had people tuning in every week, setting their clocks to Raw. But instead, we're afraid of a crappy pay-per-view buy rate. So let's bring CM Punk back the very next week.
So the WWE wrestlers walked out on Triple H, like we had mentioned. Now, that was led by a disgruntled group that consisted of Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Vicky Guerrero, Cody Rhodes, David Otunga, and Christian. And they were the kind of leaders to get this whole thing going, with David Otunga being the lawyer. The questions regarding Triple H's leadership style would eventually come prominent after R-Truth and The Miz would attack everyone at ringside, including referees, cameramen.
Right, that big finish at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, so that was the conclusion. So that's sort of how it all got underway.
And then pretty much after a vote of no confidence by the superstars, the divas, and even the referees, the entire roster would walk out on Triple H, starting with none other than Jerry the King Lawler, which we just heard in our clip there. Now, even the cameramen put down their equipment and joined the
which I thought was garbage.
With joined the roster on the walkout, so.
Here's the thing. You had the cameraman at ringside walkout, but not the cameraman at the back of the arena who were shooting the cameraman walking out. You know, like.
Well, you still got to have a show, but yes. But I see where you're going with this. To play with the whole, or to go with the whole realism of the whole thing, then yeah, you should have had those camera guys walk out as well. But
yeah. And just to add to this whole thing, the one thing I wanted to bring up was, you know, where they could have gone with this. Like, obviously they have house shows that they need to do after that Raw took place. They had a SmackDown taping the next night. You know, where they could have gone with this, how do they announce this walkout to the fans the next day, basically? Well, all they said was, the wrestlers will continue to wrestle as long as Triple H doesn't show up in the building. Like, Triple H is showing up to a house show anyways.
Exactly. Now, let me tell you, Corey, this is my problem with the whole thing, and here's what I would have done. Okay, first of all, my problem with this whole walkout angle thing is that the wrestlers are walking out because of an unsafe work environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like a contradiction in terms. It's professional wrestling, for God's sake. An unsafe work environment is in the bloody job description.
Yeah.
So again, it just doesn't make any sense right there.
So the one thing they wanted to fight for to combat this unsafe work environment is they wanted to form a union.
Yeah.
Which we know is a no-no in the
wrestling business.
Wrestling world.
A promotion can't function with a union, but
let me just spend a couple minutes on this. How could it ever happen in the WWE?
A union?
Yeah.
No.
And
I'm saying no.
And tell me why you think that could never happen.
Because in the wrestling business, you have to have a hierarchical system for it to work. You have to have guys that are at the top, that are more established, and then you've got the guys that have to work their way up to the top, right? It's like you couldn't have a guy who just comes into the business and put him in main event matches just because he's got a union stipulation or something like that. You know what I mean? You have to have a hierarchical system where guys earn their way up to the top and become stars. And it's like, if you had a union system, you'd have guys that really should have gone by the wayside a lot sooner, and they haven't. But they've stuck around because they're part of a union.
Exactly. Right? I'll tell you this: if there ever was a union in the WWE, it would be the most bizarre union agreement you have ever seen.
No kidding.
Because you're right. When you have a union agreement, you have seniority, and with seniority comes long-term stability. If you have a wrestler who doesn't deserve to be in the WWE, but he's part of a union and part of that seniority structure, I mean, he could be hanging around for years. You would never get fresh new talent on the show.
No, you'd have Hogan wrestling matches in the main event still if we had a union going.
And typically with unions, you know, all the pay scales are pretty set in stone.
Yeah.
So if there was a superstar who was making killer merchandise sales,
right,
you know, making tons of money for the company,
like John Cena,
that person would never be able to benefit because they'd be stuck in a union group or status, and they would never be able to...
And they'd be bound by their labor contract.
Exactly. They would never be able to leap ahead of the other superstars who aren't doing so much for the company.
Exactly. And that's why I don't think a union would ever work in wrestling.
It wouldn't. I mean, there's a reason why one man is in charge named Vince McMahon, and that's because that's the only way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And the union, as great as it would be to see these wrestlers have full medical and full dental and all that sort of stuff, it just doesn't... It wouldn't work.
I do think that WWE should provide health insurance. That's just my opinion, but...
But, so when David Otunga had sort of mentioned this on Raw, and he had said the word union, and they walked out, they got what they wanted, Triple H left, and now John Laurinaitis was the interim general manager, that union talk has now just disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, again, you said the word, you put it in everyone's mind, you planted the seed... And
that could have been a whole angle into itself.
Yeah, and now it's over. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could have been a good angle. You want to go with the reality era? You should have had a full-on struggle to power, right? and a fight to form a labor dispute.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyways, here's what I would have done with the walkout, Corey. Now, I would have not brought the roster back 10 or 15 minutes into next week's show. I would have kept the roster off the show. And why not bring in like fake wrestlers? Remember when they did fake Razor Ramon and fake Diesel?
Yeah.
Well, why not bring in fake wrestlers? Bring in like a fake Kofi Kingston, or bring in like a fake Alberto Del Rio or something, right?
Or even sign wrestlers that you've never even seen.
Or have
before.
local guys come on.
Give them
right?
a shot. Make exactly. people wonder what is going on.
Well, who's this guy, right?
Or why? I can't believe they're actually putting this wrestler on Raw. Like, is this real, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, or do something like they did with Santino Marella. Have guys come out of the crowd and wrestle. Do some kind of angle like that.
The walkout lasted all of but one segment. That was it. One segment. Yeah. The beginning segment on Raw.
It's terrible.
That was it.
It's terrible.
It is.
And you know what? Personally, I would have, honestly, instead of putting a half-assed card together for Vengeance, I would have just scrapped the Vengeance pay-per-view altogether and just built up Survivor Series.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they're not going to do that.
No, of course not.
You know that's not going
to
happen.
They're not going to get rid of a pay-per-view.
I mean, they can use Vengeance to fuel Survivor Series, which is what it will be.
Of course.
It's going to be, it's going to be a catalyst in the build to Survivor Series. But other than that, I mean, it's not really looking that great.
I'm just saying that's what I would have done. If I were in charge of creative, that's what I would have done. I would have had the walkout last longer
to
make it more meaningful, at least.
Well, they rush everything.
Oh.
That's the biggest problem.
CM Punk's a perfect example.
Exactly. All right, James, we could talk about this for a while. We got to move on. I want to talk about Big Show returning for Vengeance on Mark Henry.
It's taken me 15 years to be world champion. And I'm the most dominant one of all time. I don't fear no man. I don't back down from nobody. And I'll take anybody on anytime as long as you're the number one contender. And Big Show was not.
Well, I've said it on previous shows, and I'm going to say it again. I am really feeling Mark Henry these days.
Oh,
I
mean, he's by far the best character on wrestling television.
He's the best heel they've got right now. His promo work is awesome. His in-ring has improved so much.
His look is so intimidating.
And yeah, he just plays the monster heel perfectly.
They have built him properly.
Definitely.
Unlike anything else they're doing in wrestling right now.
But on the other hand, it's also been Mark Henry that's upped his game as well. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of good booking on WWE's part and Mark Henry upping his game at the same time.
They gave him a shot and he ran with it.
Yeah, they gave him the ball and he ran with it, totally.
And that, you know, we've seen other wrestlers do that, but they, for some reason, they always stop them short, you know?
Yeah.
But for the first time in a while, we're actually seeing a guy with a lengthy run, and they're building him they're building him slowly but surely, and it's paying off because he is possibly going to be the biggest heel heading into WrestleMania.
And he's a credible champion. That's what you gotta have. You gotta have credibility with your champions.
I was so glad to see Randy Orton lose to Mark Henry.
Oh, me too.
And get Orton out of the title picture altogether and have Mark Henry move on to something else. It now looks like it's going to be the Big Show.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? Like I said on Monday, I don't think it's going to be the best wrestled match, but nevertheless, it's still a match that I'm looking forward to because it's two big guys. And I personally, I've always liked it when the two big guys just go at it, you know, head to head.
Are you not done with the Big Show, though? I mean, do you not get the feeling, like, even though he was gone, are you not already tired of him?
Well, the way you got to look at the Big Show is his role in the WWE now is purely as an enhancement talent. It's basically to make other guys look good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't think you're going to see the Big Show with a lengthy championship run unless it's near the end of his career.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, at this
point, they'll probably give him one more.
At this point, his job is to basically build up new guys, right? Which is fine.
And he's that big monster of a man. When you go to a live wrestling event, you know, you see the Big Show in person. He adds that larger-than-life character to the wrestling game.
Absolutely. And at this point, he's the most credible opponent, I'd say, for Mark Henry at this point, right?
Yeah.
And it fits into their whole theme of vengeance, right? With their match coming up at Vengeance, because he wants to get revenge.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah. So how do you see that one playing out then?
Oh, Mark Henry's going to win.
Yeah.
Mark Henry's going to win. Big Show will put on a good match, but Mark Henry's definitely going to walk out of there.
Can you remind the people how this all has come
to play? Sure, I'll break this down a little bit here for you. Now, Mark Henry and Big Show, they kind of started feuding sporadically throughout the summertime. And I don't know if you guys remember, but Mark Henry, like, did the World's Strongest Slam to Big Show through the announcer's table. And do you remember when he ran him through the wall of the cage there?
Actually looked really good.
That was really good when he was having that cage match with Alberto Del Rio.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, their feud would culminate at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, Mark Henry won. Now, after the match, Henry would actually legitimately fracture the Big Show's fibula with a chair, and it kept him out of action for about 4 months. So, yeah. Anyways, this past week on SmackDown, Big Show returned, and as we heard in our clip, Mark Henry vehemently denied him a shot at the World Heavyweight Championship. Well, Big Show would respond by basically beating Mark Henry down and chokeslamming him through the announcer's table.
Getting him back.
Making Henry look weak, actually, for the first time in...
Yeah, something Orton never really did.
Probably in the last 2 months here made, you know, Mark Henry look weak. So, and anyways, Big Show was actually about to try to injure Mark Henry's leg in the same fashion that he did his with the chair, but then he was kind of stopped by a SmackDown GM, Teddy Long, and then he was given his match at Vengeance for the World Heavyweight Championship. So at Vengeance, World Heavyweight title, Mark Henry, Big Show.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. This storyline is just getting going again. I mean, we're going to have the first match with Henry and Big Show. Probably won't be the last. It's just getting started. I think we should probably come back to this in a couple, you know, maybe next week.
Maybe next week. I'm telling you just before we end it off here, the smartest thing WWE could do would be to keep that strap on Mark Henry all the way till WrestleMania.
Well said.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
All right, everyone. Tonight's poll question: who will be the one to eventually replace John Laurinaitis as the one in charge of Monday Night Raw? The choices, James?
Well, we've got a choice between Vince McMahon, Mick Foley, JBL. CM Punk, or none of the above.
If you want to take part, log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote. And also, I just want to remind everyone, it's a good time to email us anytime before, during, and after the show at onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. If it's any good, we'll put it on the air. Now, James, let's quickly get into this. Who is the one to replace John Laurinaitis?
Well, if you're going to ask my opinion, I think it's going to be Mick Foley.
Yeah?
Because there's lots of rumblings, and Mick Foley himself said he's probably going to be returning to the WWE here soon. And you know what? Mick's even said himself that he's in no condition to wrestle a match. So,
well, what's the holdup, though? I mean, if they wanted to replace Triple H as COO, why didn't we see Mick Foley come this Monday on Raw?
Because they had to establish Laurinaitis as the foil, like I was mentioning earlier, so they could have their Survivor Series match against each other.
So you think that the guy who will save the world from John Laurinaitis is going to be Mick Foley? And
I think so. I think we're going to see that after Survivor Series.
I have a different take on the whole idea.
All right, let me hear it.
I actually don't think it's... I think my answer to the poll question is actually... it's going to be none of the above. I think it's actually going to be, believe it or not, Chris Jericho, of all people.
Chris Jericho?
Yeah, I do. I think Chris Jericho is the one to come back to the WWE, and he will be the one to, you know... I don't see Chris Jericho wrestling week in and week out anymore. No. But I think he probably does miss being on the road. I think that would be a perfect fit for him. And he also has a name that's big enough to make the people go, wow, you know what I mean?
That's true. Okay, folks, you heard it here first. Smack Talk Radio Live. Chris Jericho is going to replace John Laurinaitis as the Raw GM.
That's my guess at this point. Okay, folks, coming up on the show, Smack Talk Radio Live, we're talking local wrestling in the Pacific Northwest. And who better to talk about that than with ASW wrestler Disco Fury. He's coming up a little later.
Also, in tonight's top five, we're going to run down the top five greatest managers in WWE history.
And our post-to-post report next.
Smack Talk Radio Live. With a car seat in the middle, broken down on the interstate. I got a beer-stained t-shirt looking like Joker. Something about me just ain't right. I'm a cash-stealing, drug-dealing loser without any feeling. Getting trailer trash tonight. 'Cause I'm a lowlife.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, James, the post-to-post report, catching you up with the business of the business. Let's kick it off, the post-to-post report this week, with what else? A Hardy update.
Oh, God.
Jeff Hardy was released today from prison after serving his 10-day sentence for being found guilty on 2 counts of possession of a controlled substance and 1 count of conspiracy to traffic. He must now complete 30 months of probation and pay a $100,000 fine.
Jeez. Okay, more bad publicity for the wrestling industry this week as former WWE wrestler Tyson Tomko was arrested Monday in St. Augustine, Florida on a felony robbery charge. At approximately 5 p.m. Monday, Tomko allegedly entered a pharmacy and demanded that the pharmacist give him all the oxycodone in the safe. The pharmacist told detectives that Tomko held his hand under his shirt as if he was, pointing something.
That could be worse. You know, when you do something like that, that could be even bigger problems.
Definitely. Now, at approximately 10 p.m., deputies were called into a Chili's restaurant about a person using a narcotics in the bathroom. Tomko was arrested after he was found in a stall with a syringe found in the bathroom wastebasket. 2 bottles of oxycodone were found at a local restaurant nearby where a man meeting Tomko's description had spent an hour in the bathroom.
The only loser here out of everyone involved is the restaurant Chili's. I love Chili's. All right.
Where do I even go with that?
WWE kicked off their eagerly anticipated Mexico tour last night, starting in Monterrey, Mexico. It was a Raw brand house show, which saw CM Punk teamed with John Morrison, defeating The Miz and R-Truth, and the main event saw WWE champion Alberto Del Rio lose to John Cena via DQ. This upcoming Monday Night Raw comes from Mexico City, which will be taped Saturday.
Should be an interesting crowd, I think.
I can't wait to see the reaction for Alberto Del Rio from Mexico. I'm very interested
to see
that.
It's going to be interesting to see him get face heat.
Mm-hmm.
WWE released a press release over the Business Wire on Tuesday announcing that the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, The Rock, will be making his return to the city of Boston in the TD Garden on Monday, November 14th for a special 3-hour episode of Monday Night Raw. The WWE is advertising it as the first face-to-face encounter with The Rock and Cena since the spring, and will these two be able to get along in Cena's hometown of Boston 6 days before they team up at the Survivor Series?
I have a feeling that Cena's going to get booed out of the building in his own hometown.
That's going to be fun to see.
Yeah. In TNA news, Hulk Hogan did a round of media appearances this week promoting TNA's big pay-per-view Bound for Glory, which takes place this Sunday. Hogan has been promoting the pay-per-view with Kurt Angle versus Bobby Roode as the main event, and using careful words, he's describing his own bout with Sting as a fight and not a wrestling match.
Well, you're never going to see Hogan take a bump again. That's just the reality.
He's actually admitted he's not taking a single bump in this match. So take that co-main event for what it is.
TNA, if you're smart, you'll put the strap on Rude.
That's true.
Kurt Angle and Don Curtis have been selected to be 2012 inductees into the George Tragos Lou Thesz Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. Angle was, of course, a two-time NCAA champion for Clarion University and 1996 Olympic champion, which was in Atlanta too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Curtis was a member of the University of Buffalo wrestling team and was NWA tag team champion with Mark Lewin during the 1950s and the 60s. Hall of Fame weekend is July 13th and 14th in Waterloo, Iowa.
Brock Lesnar has been made official to be featured in the upcoming WWE 12 video game. Dana White, president of the UFC, of course, agreed to allow Brock to be part of the game as he doesn't want to stand in the way of one of his athletes making money on their history. In terms of Brock Lesnar suiting up for another match in a WWE ring, though, Dana said that he'll never wrestle for the WWE as long as he's under contract with the UFC.
Obviously. Do you think that's going to sell more games?
Maybe for the hardcore fan. Me personally, no, I don't really care. But maybe.
Me neither. Now, Scott Hall, also known to the wrestling world as Razor Ramon, will be profiled on ESPN's show E60 next Wednesday. Eric Bischoff, among others, will be on the program talking about Scott Hall's struggle with alcohol and drugs and his current rock bottom status.
Yep, that should be an interesting one.
Did you see that video of him
at an
independent show?
Yeah, it's ugly. It's
terrible.
Okay, let's get into the financials here, James, as we always do every week. Current WWE stock price, $10 a share even.
Hey, it's going up.
Last week, at one point, the stock was actually at $8.82 a share, so it has actually gone up quite a bit.
Instead of going down.
Yeah, which is rare, I mean, considering the poor television that we're watching these days.
No kidding.
I'm a little surprised.
I'm just glad to see it hit double digits again.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of television ratings, this past Monday's Raw scored a 3.25 rating, up 0.2 of a rating point compared to last week, and was actually the highest number since August 15th, the night after SummerSlam. The big story this week, though, in the ratings department was a 13% decline in the second hour viewership compared to the first hour. So, which is actually the largest hour-to-hour decline of the past 4 years. So basically, fans tuned in, wanted to check out what happened.
What happened from the
lockdown. They saw what happened.
And they're like, screw this.
And they left. Overall, Raw averaged just over 5 million viewers this week, which again is the most since August 15th. The first hour averaged 5.38 million, and then the second dropped to an average of 4.67 million viewers. Raw ranked number 2 overall on cable TV Monday night, and in key male demographics behind ESPN's Monday Night Football, which averaged 16 million viewers.
Wow.
The pay-per-view numbers, early numbers are in for the recent Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which took place, of course, on October 2nd in New Orleans. James, it ain't pretty.
I didn't think it would be.
Expectations within the WWE would be that the show would do worse than last year, and early numbers indicate a 20% drop from the previous pay-per-view Night of Champions. The live attendance at that show, Hell in a Cell, saw only 7,500 paid fans, 9,400 in total, with a live gate of 475,000, which is lower than most WWE pay-per-view events.
Would that even fill the P&E Forum?
Oh, God, I have no idea. That's a good question. I mean, that was a terrible build to a pay-per-view. You got to admit.
No kidding.
I mean, that was... There's 2 weeks? You give yourself 2 weeks to build a pay-per-view into Hell in a Cell and make people want to buy that? You can't be doing that. Would you agree?
And then it's 3 weeks to the next one.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand what their thinking is with this.
Money grab, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts then? You know, we're come and gone from Hell in a Cell. We're heading into Vengeance. You liking it? You're not liking it?
You know what? I would have rather not seen Vengeance and just had a straight build up to Survivor Series.
Yeah, like you said earlier, which is a good idea. I mean, they're not going to do that.
But no, they're not going to.
But when you're getting gates of 7,500 fans,
it's terrible.
That is a terrible. You got to rework something or rethink something
no
at least.
No kidding.
I mean, I understand. These are all. I think they almost planned the pay-per-views a year in advance, right? They got to rent the building, the arenas. You know, there's a lot of planning going involved. So they're not going to cancel Vengeance no matter what.
No.
But, I don't know. I'm not impressed with WWE this week. Can you tell? All right. Let's take another break here, James. Coming up on the show next, the local wrestling scene.
Oh, I'm excited for this.
We're talking local wrestling with ASW superstar Disco Fury. We're going to talk about their upcoming super show on October 21st.
And as always, in tonight's Top 5, like we said before, bringing you the best managers in the WWE.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, James, the local wrestling scene, catching you up to date with everything in the Pacific Northwest.
That's right.
And folks, we are in for a treat tonight. We have local ASW wrestler Nathan Burke, better known to the wrestling world as Disco Fury. Disco, you there, buddy?
Yeah, I am, man. How's it going?
Not bad. How are you?
Hey, Disco. How's it going, man?
Fantastic.
So, first of all, I got to say thank you for doing this.
No problem.
And, we really appreciate it. And this is hopefully the start of many things to come here on Smack Talk Radio Live. We really hope to talk about, you know, ASW, ECCW, any other local wrestling promotion that wants to come on the show and talk to us. So you're the first, and we can't thank you enough, and we really appreciate it. Now, we want to get into... First of all, we're going to get to your super show that's coming up October 21st at the Cloverdale Fairgrounds, and that's your big super show. We're going to get to that in a second. But first, I was hoping you could introduce the audience to who may have never heard of Disco Fury. If you could introduce them just to what exactly or who exactly is Disco Fury.
Disco Fury is pretty much the guy that I really am inside, going to clubs, dancing, having a great time, eager to meet people and entertain people. You know, I can't thank the people enough for helping me achieve the Disco Fury character. It's been poetry in motion, and I'm just very thankful. It's awesome.
How long have you actually been wrestling for?
I started wrestling amateur in high school, then a little bit for Simon Fraser University, and then I started my pro wrestling debut in 1999. I started training in 1998, and so from there.
Okay, Disco, was there anybody on TV or in real life who was kind of an influence on you getting into the whole professional wrestling game?
Well, my goal started when I was 3 years old. I was sitting down watching TV, and I told my parents, could barely talk, you know, And I said, you know, I'm going to be a pro wrestler. And they kind of laughed. You know, I told my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, anyone that wanted to listen and could listen, I'm going to be a pro wrestler. So fast forward 19 years, and I just did that. I got my goal, and I became a pro wrestler. But speaking, go back to where we were, I remember going to a live wrestling show in, I would say, 1985. I was 10 years old, and there was a guy named Gary Robbins. Now, the guy is 7'1". He is a ginormous man, and I went to a local wrestling show, and he was wrestling Vader at the time, and he won his match. I went to the back to say congratulations, and I saw Vader, and Vader's like, get out of my way, kid, and gave me a chop. Right on the spot, Gary Robbins picked him up and slammed him on the concrete right in front of me, and to this day, that's awesome.
Do you remember where that show was at?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm from St. Catharines, Ontario, originally, and it was at the Burgoyne Arena in St. Catharines, Ontario.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So, I was doing some...
Well, and then he came to my house after. So, I had my birthday. It was for my birthday party. And I said to all my friends, hey, I'm going to have a wrestler come to my house. They didn't believe me, and knock, 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 7'1", walks in the door, the Canadian Giant. Hello, how's it going? My name's Gary Robbins.
Wow. That's awesome. So, I was doing some research on you earlier today, and from what I found, you are a 6-time NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I've defended that belt in Japan. I've defended that belt in Europe. I've defended that belt in the United States and in Canada. I'm the only one to go from coast to coast, from Europe to the UK, or from Europe to the land of the rising sun and back again. And it was an honor to do so.
And you are actually you've actually won that championship more times than anyone else. 6 times. That's impressive.
That's correct. I'm the only one, I think, in the Pacific Northwest to beat Daniel Bryan from WWE twice.
Awesome.
Not once, twice.
That's great.
Now that is impressive.
I took that belt away from him.
And so, aside from the World Junior Heavyweight Championship, then, what are your personal greatest accomplishments? Like, what is it that when you look back at your career, what are some of your high points?
You know, this is going to sound different. My high points are actually helping others get to where they need to be. There's a lot of guys wrestling in the Pacific Northwest today, mostly in ECCW, that I've helped train and guide to get to the next level, to step in the ring, to get places, to do things. You know, my training style is a lot different than others. People go in the ring, they train how to do, you know, certain moves. I don't do that. I start from the ground up. I go from cardio. If you can't do the cardio, you can't wrestle a match. So a lot of the guys that have made it anywhere, Kyle O'Reilly, take him for instance. I helped him along the way. I didn't do all of it. I'm just one of the cogs in the thing to make it go, right? So that's probably my biggest achievement to date,
and
is helping others.
And speaking about that, so you and a couple others with All Star Wrestling actually have a wrestling training school, is that correct?
Absolutely. We have the only one in the Lower Mainland and possibly the Pacific Northwest that I know of. I'm not too sure if there's any left in Washington State or Portland area, but I know that we're the only one that's going right now, and the door is always open to anybody. ECCW, DOA, it doesn't matter who you are. If you want to come train, there's an open door for you.
And how would someone get involved if they are interested in joining that wrestling school?
Well, they can go online and look it up at www.aswcanada.com, or you can go on my Facebook, Nathan Burke, or you can look under Michelle Starr. Add him as a friend on Facebook, get in touch with them, send them a message, and we will guide you to where you need to be.
All right, Disco, let's get into your Super Show. ASW is presenting the Super Show Friday, October 21st at the Cloverdale Fairgrounds. If anyone is interested in going to this show, and I'm definitely recommending doing so, they would check out the website, aswcanada.com. Now, with you personally, you are teaming up with Michelle Starr and Travis Sparks in a 6-man tag team match against David Smith, Mr. India, and TKO.
That's correct. I've wrestled D.H. Smith once before, so this will be good.
And so he's actually just coming off his recent stint with the WWE. Do you have any idea what he's been up to, other than, you know, in between the WWE and this show?
If I know Harry DH, if I know him, he's working really hard, getting himself back in tip-top shape, maintaining what he's got. He's going out kicking butt, taking names, and he's going to get himself back there. He's gonna make a name for himself. He's not done yet.
I heard he was going to get into the MMA game.
That possibly quite be. You know, he's a nice guy, straight up, heart of gold. But I wouldn't want to meet him on the other side of the octagon or anything because he's a mean guy.
Now, speaking of this super show, you guys actually have another big name coming to town. Could you fill the audience in on who that might be?
He's the Vampire Warrior Gangrel. Now, for anybody that doesn't know Gangrel, to me, he was the leader of Edge and Christian at the Brood. He is the man. He is just awesome looking. He's a specimen of himself. He's got real vampire teeth. It's insane. It's just awesome.
Jeez.
You guys are having this. Before you're teaming up with Michelle Starr for this six team tag team match. You have teamed up recently, and there's something I wanted to ask you about. You recently teamed up back in August, and you teamed up with Starr to wrestle for ECW, which hasn't happened for quite a long time from what I remember. And there's a bit of history about how this match went down. It was you and Michelle Starr versus Scotty Mac and Stalin Smith. There is a bit of history with that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. The co-former owners of ECCW with one of the new owners of ECCW. There was some bad blood, but that bad blood's over, and we're trying to rectify wrestling in the Pacific Northwest, solidify it, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And the folks hadn't seen you in ECCW for a long time. So what was the response to you when you actually did when you guys came out of that entranceway? Was it positive?
This isn't out of my mouth. This is out of the fans' mouth. We had the biggest pop of the night. When Michelle Starr and I came to the curtain, we were welcomed in open arms, and they cheered very loudly for us.
Excellent. Okay, Disco, before we let you go here, we want to what we're planning to do with every interview with the local wrestling scene, we want to do a little word association. So we were thinking of just asking you a couple names or a few names, and if you could just give us a quick thought on that person.
First thing that comes to your mind.
Is that all right?
Perfect.
All right, here we go. We're going to start it off with an easy one, Michelle Starr.
The man.
Enough said.
Okay, next, Matt Ecstatic.
The future.
Artemis Spencer.
Technically sound.
All right, we're going to switch gears, go to the WWE here. How about John Morrison?
Ooh, gifted small man.
Switching gears again here. How about Scotty Mac?
There, too much to say about the guy. He's actually one of the best wrestlers the Pacific Northwest has ever seen.
Okay. How about John Laurinaitis, the new interim Raw General Manager?
No comment.
We didn't think so.
Okay, next one's the architect, Mark Anthony.
Very talented.
All right, CM Punk.
Oh, ahead of his time.
Oh, that's a good one.
And last but not least, Hulk Hogan.
Immortal.
Good one.
All right, Disco, that about wraps it up. I just want to thank you once again for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to let the fans know about before we let you go?
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of ECCW guys on the show as well, the Super Show, and I would just like to thank them for being on as well. So, once again, October 21st, Alice McKay Building in Cloverdale. You got to be there.
Okay, Disco Fury, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Have a great night.
All right, you talk to you soon. Okay, that was Disco Fury.
That was wonderful.
Your thoughts?
Well, pretty good interview, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty good, the first one.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about this Super Show here. Why don't we just quickly run down the card as of right now?
That sounds like a good idea.
We had talked about that six-man tag team match. You know, D.H. Smith, or David Hart Smith, I guess he's going by now, Mr. India, TKO versus Michelle Starr, Disco Fury, and Travis Sparks. Now, in the semi-main event, we're going to have former WWE star Gangrel versus The Rocket, Randy Tyler.
Well, that should be a good match. Rock and Randy Tyler is a very, very good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a good character, too.
And then in a Legends Grudge match, we are actually going to see Rocky De La Sera versus Fabulous Fabio.
Ooh, Fabulous Fabio. There's one to see.
And for the ASW junior title, a best 2 out of 3 of falls, we're going to see the Great Kasaki, who is the champion, the junior champion, versus Scotty Mack of ECCW.
Oh, there you go. Scotty just like Mack. Just like he was mentioned, there's going to be a lot of ECCW guys at the show.
Yeah, and Matt Ecstatic versus Azeem the Dream with the Natural. That'll be another bout on the contest.
Another ECCW guy in Azeem the Dream.
Mm-hmm. And Bruiser Joe versus Fitness Freddy Funk.
Probably not the best match, but it should be something entertaining.
I hope he brings out the shake weight. Or what is it called again? The shake? Yeah, the shake weight.
Yeah, the shake weight.
He comes out with the shake weight and he pumps up the audience to get him, you know, he wants the fans to be fit, just like Fitness Freddy Funk.
Fitness Freddy Funk.
And then just announced the return of the Canadian superstar, Seth Knight, as he takes on the mighty Iton. I've actually never heard of that guy.
Neither have I.
But I have heard of Seth
Knight.
I have heard of Seth Knight before.
Definitely.
Okay, so again, ASWCanada.com. Next week, we are going to be talking ECCW. They have another show coming out.
They've got their big super show coming up, actually.
They do, Halloween Hell. But before that, they do have another one, which will be Seek and Destroy. And that's going to be October 22nd at the Russian Community Center.
Oh, that's right.
The main event there is going to see the Honky Tonk Kid, who used to be the Divine Prophet. I don't know if you knew that.
No. Oh.
He's changed his gimmick to the Honky Tonk Kid. He's going to be taking on Tony Baroni. And again, that's October 22nd. So the local wrestling scene is improving, James.
Makes me wonder why he changed his gimmick. That Divine Prophet gimmick was really good.
Yeah, you liked it?
I did.
I think
he came out and he did the sermons and stuff. He got the crowd really going.
But I'm interested to see what else we can come up with here. So, I mean, it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, the local wrestling scene. You want to run down what's coming up next?
Coming up next is our top five, the top five best managers in WWE history.
All right, and this is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Midnight great sun is low, let into hearts of men who need more than they get. Daylight deals of man to a woman who has made too many bets. The mirror stares you in the face and says, baby,
you're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, tonight's top five. This is going to be a good one.
It is a good one.
You put a lot of work into this one.
I try.
Top five WWE managers.
All right, let's
start it off, James.
Let's kick things off with number five. This is one I don't know, maybe a lot of you haven't heard of, but the Grand Wizard of Wrestling. Now, starting out in the 60s as a manager in the Detroit territories, Ernie Roth started out under the names Mr. Clean and more famously Abdullah Farouk, a man sent from the Middle East to handle the Sheik's U.S. affairs, not to be confused with the Iron Sheik. Now, as Farouk, Roth would lay the groundwork for heel managers for years to come, as his style of physically interfering in his clients' matches would be copied on numerous occasions in the future. Now, in the early 70s, Roth would leave behind the Farouk character and start a stint with the WWE, rebranding himself as the Grand Wizard of Wrestling. Under this new gimmick, Roth would manage such greats as Sergeant Slaughter, Ken Patera, Cowboy Bob Orton, Greg the Hammer Valentine, and superstar Billy Graham. But, sadly, Roth died of a heart attack in 1983 at only 54 years old. He was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 1995 by longtime friend, beautiful Bobby Harmon.
And number four, top five WWE managers, Paul Bearer. Now, Paul Bearer, whose real name is William Alvin Moody, is most famous for his association with one man, The Undertaker. After being a manager in 1984 for World Class Championship Wrestling under the moniker Percival Pringle, Moody's career would take off in the early 90s after signing with WWE to manage their new star, The Undertaker. Vince McMahon would draw on Moody's real-life experience in the mortuary industry to create the pallbearer character, and once he debuted with The Undertaker in February 1991, the rest, as they say, James, it's history.
Definitely.
With his trademark, "Oh, yes!" and his sinister ghostly
visage.
Paul Bearer even hosted a segment called The Funeral Parlor, which was responsible for such memorable moments as the Ultimate Warrior being shut into the casket.
I remember that.
Moody is still under contract with the WWE today.
Well, that brings us to number three, none other than Classy Freddie Blassie. After getting his start wrestling shoot matches at the local carnival, Frederick Kenneth Blassman would eventually go on to have a legendary career as a wrestler and then later on as a manager of heel wrestlers. Now, the son of German immigrants, after his service in the Pacific during World War II, Blassie would gain notoriety in 1953 in Paul Jones's Atlanta territory as the Vampire, and he was billed as such for his tendency to bite his opponents and file his teeth during his promos. Now, Blassie would then wrestle in Los Angeles and Japan, famously feuding with Japanese legend Rikki Dozen before joining up with WWE, then WWWF, in 1964, immediately entering into a feud with then-champion Bruno Sammartino. Blassie would retire from active wrestling, though, in 1974 after a California law prevented anyone over the age of 55 from obtaining a wrestling license. Seems weird to me, but He would then become a manager for WWE until his full retirement in 1986. Now, Blassie's retainer was like a who's who of wrestling legends. Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, High Chief Peter Maivia, Blackjack Mulligan, The Iron Sheik, and George the Animal Steel. Now, Blassie also managed Muhammad Ali in the infamous boxer versus wrestler match against Antonio Inoki in 1976. But Blassie died of heart and kidney failure on June 2nd, 2003, and he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 1994.
Which brings us to number two, Jimmy Hart. James Ray Hart, better known as the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, would get his beginning in the wrestling business managing Jerry the King Lawler, with whom he went to Memphis Treadwell High School with. Hart would join the WWE in 1985, and McMahon would give him the nickname Mouth of the South for his signature megaphone. During the 80s, Hart would manage a laundry list of WWE legends such as Greg Valentine, King Kong Bundy, the Honky Tonk Man, the Hart Foundation, the Nasty Boys, Money Inc., and Hulk Hogan. After the 93 King of the Ring, both Hart and Hogan would leave the company and join rival WCW. There he would manage Hogan, Flair, and Giant, and would remain with the company until it sailed to the WWE in 2001. Now, after some stints in the independents and a few stopovers in TNA, the Mouth of the South would eventually rejoin the WWE in 2011 to work on WrestleMania-related projects. He was
excellent, baby!
We actually had the pleasure of hearing Jimmy Hart recently,
in Vancouver here,
which was part of the Hogan's and Friends tour that has been going around. It's basically Hulk Hogan comes with a bunch of guys, and you know they talk about their stories from the past.
I wonder if they're even doing that anymore.
Yeah, they are. No, they are. They're still doing them. They don't really advertise them that much, but they are still doing them.
I don't know. I didn't find it that great. It kind of degenerated into people asking them for hugs near the end.
But. Yeah. Okay, let's get to our number one, shall we?
First question, Bobby Heenan. You know, last week I had Mr. Blunderful on here, Mr. Worthless Paul Orndorff, and I want to know, is it true, is there $25,000 on his head?
There's $25,000 on the tail of Paul Orndorff, which is like his head because that's where his brains are. He thinks he made a big name for himself by firing me. He needs me. Everything he accomplished is because of me. Now, you got a bunch of guys out here like Ricky Steamboat, the Junkyard Dog, Tito Santana, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, that seem to be taking the side now for Paul Orndorff. Well, I don't care how many of you guys stick your nose where it don't belong. If I have to, and I can afford to do it, I'll put a bounty on everybody's head.
That was classic. Now, was there any doubt?
No.
Number one, Bobby the Brain Heenan. Now, you couldn't have a list of managers without including the man who personifies everything a heel manager should be. Now, Raymond Lewis Heenan, or Bobby the Brain Heenan, combined a quick wit with an ability to bring success and get over with the crowd to whomever he was managing to take the number one spot on this list. Heenan began his career in the late 60s in the American Wrestling Association, managing Nick Bockwinkel, who was just talking about there, Ray Stevens, and the Blackjacks. Bockwinkel was the first to find success under Heenan's management after winning his first of many AWA world titles after beating Vern Gagne in 1975. Then, in 1976, while Bockwinkel was still champion, the Blackjacks won the AWA World Tag Titles under Heenan, making him the first manager in history to manage a major promotion's single and tag world champions simultaneously. It was also in the AWA that Heenan would gain the Weasel moniker, as you heard the crowd chanting there, something that would stick with him the rest of his career. Now, after suffering a neck injury in Japan in 1983, Heenan would join the WWE to manage Jesse the Body Ventura in 1984. During his run in the WWE, he would manage the infamous Heenan family, which included legends such as Paul Orndorff, King Kong Bundy, Andre the Giant, the Brainbusters, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, Ravishing Rick Rude, the Brooklyn Brawler, Harley Race, Lex Luger, Mr. Perfect, and probably most famously, Ric Flair. Heenan would go on to do color commentating duties with both the WWE and WCW before retiring after his release from WCW in 2000. Heenan has recently successfully battled throat cancer, which has drastically altered his appearance, and he makes sporadic appearances in the WWE from time to time.
That is, I mean, there's no other number one. I don't think there ever will be.
There, no.
I mean, I was searching on YouTube today for clips of Bobby Heenan, and there was no shortage of which ones I could have thrown up there.
No kidding.
I mean, the guy is just, line after line, it's just comedic gold.
I have never seen somebody with such a quick wit right on the spot. You know? It's unbelievable.
If you ever get a chance to see the Bobby the Brain Heenan DVD that the WWE had released, I think it was last year.
Fantastic DVD,
absolutely. And you will be laughing your face off for the entire time.
And then you will realize just truly how talented that guy was.
But Bobby the Brain Heenan could be funny when he needed to be, but he could be very serious when he wanted to fuel a storyline, and that guy was in the zone and he wanted to, you know, release his anger on one of the opponents.
He was the best at getting them over.
Absolutely.
The best.
One of the things that I love about Bobby the Brain Heenan as well, which we didn't really touch on because this is the top five managers, but Bobby the Brain Heenan might be my favorite WWE commentator of all time as well. The guy is an unbelievable commentator as well as a manager.
Yeah, you know what? Him and Gorilla Monsoon really had some magic together.
Oh, they were. The chemistry between those two was like nothing else.
The only other person I think would compare would probably be maybe Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, I was never a huge Jesse Ventura fan, but whenever Bobby the Brain Heenan was on the announcer table, whether it was with WWE or WCW, I was listening the whole time, and I loved it. I thought he was very excellent at that.
Again, the quick wit.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you about, James, was the fact that you didn't include a present-day manager on this, and most specifically, I'm thinking about
Vicky Guerrero?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of see Vicky following in the same footsteps that... Bobby Heenan is.
She almost should be on that list.
Well, she's starting to build a stable, which is good for her.
I mean, she's been in the difference between these managers that you had mentioned and Vicky Guerrero is that it's a lot harder of a sell today than it was back then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe she will make that list one day, maybe when her career's over. At this point, I'm thinking she's aiming right for the top five best managers of all time.
I got to give it to Vicky, man. Talk about someone who ran with the ball when it was given to her, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
After her husband passed away, she took that. Yeah, she took it and ran with it. So.
Okay, before we get out of here, James, I got to quickly run down one more time the poll question for tonight. Who will be the one to eventually replace John Laurinaitis as the one in charge of Monday Night Raw? 43% of you are saying Vince McMahon.
It's probably because it's the obvious choice.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm still going with Mick Foley. You're still going with Chris Jericho?
I'm going with Chris Jericho, okay, even though I think that's so far off.
Mick Foley here, Chris Jericho there.
Okay, so looking ahead to next week's show on Smack Talk Radio Live, we're going to run down all the latest from the industry in our local wrestling scene. We're going to preview ECCW's big show titled Seek and Destroy. And as well, James, don't forget, we are going to be doing another show. We're doing two shows a week now.
Two shows a week now. We've doubled our workload.
So we got Smack Talk Radio Live on Thursday, and we are actually doing a live show as soon as Monday Night Raw is over on a Monday evening. We're actually calling the show Smack Talk Radio Live on a Monday night.
That's right. I like that name.
Yeah. And we're getting that much closer to our official launch. I'm Corey Callahan.
I'm James McDonald.
Folks, thanks for tuning in to Smack Talk Radio Live.
We will see you on Monday. Bye.